So I was trying to figure out what to talk about today, and Aleph Beta has got a couple of things that I found were very good, and they're talking about the same thing from two different perspectives. So the insights that I've got here, such as they are from Aleph Beta. I can't take any credit for them myself. And what the key is there's two passages in Scripture where somebody says, "What does the Lord require of you?" And one is in Deuteronomy 10, which is what we read today. It's also in Micah 6. And the list of things required is very different. The question is obviously why and what's going on and is Micah disagreeing with Moses or anything like that. So in today's Torah portion, you have this long recap where Moses lists all the stuff that has happened up until now. And in Deuteronomy 10:12, which is where I'm going to be, he says, "And now," after all this recap. The idea there is, what do you mean, "and now"? Is there something changed? And the answer to that is yes. And if you read the rest of chapter 10 from verse 12 to the end of the chapter, it's got what seems like a whole bunch of random stuff. So unpacking that is not trivial. So in Deuteronomy 10:12, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? But to fear the Lord your God and walk in his ways, to love him and serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you today, for your good." And of course, the idea is keeping the commandments are what I would call enlightened self-interest. Things just go better when you do. "Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens and the earth and all that is in it. Yet the Lord your God..." Wait a minute. What is that? That sounds like another recap. "Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens and earth and all that is in it. Yet the Lord your God set his heart and love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples, as it is this day. Circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn, for the Lord your God is a God of gods and a Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe." What? You begin to see the problem here? What does the Lord require of you? And then you've got all this stuff. "He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving them food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear." So the insight that Aleph Beta had is that the thing that has changed, in other words, why does it start with "and now"? The thing that has changed is when God brought Israel out of Egypt, they were oppressed sojourners. In other words, they had sojourned down in Egypt and they had become slaves. Well, now what's about to happen is you guys are going to have your own nation. You are going to be strong and a mighty nation and all the things that I've promised you. So when you're on top, make sure that you don't do to those who are beneath you what was done to you in Egypt. That's what is required. Love the Lord your God and all that kind of stuff. That gets stated over and over again in Scripture, lots of times. But the thing that's different now is you're going to be in a position to oppress other people because you're going to be a great and mighty nation. Remember what I did to Egypt. And what he says here in verse 17, "For the Lord your God is God of gods, Lord of lords, the great and mighty and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe." He is not going to ignore justice and righteousness for gain. "He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing." In other words, that's what I did for you. The reason I acted when you were slaves in Egypt is because it is my nature to to execute justice for the fatherless and the widow and the sojourner. That's why I reached into Egypt and got you. Oh, and by the way, I love your fathers and so forth, so I was paying attention to you. But the thing that made me act is the injustice that was being done to you as sojourners in a strange land. So, when you get to be the mighty kingdom that I'm going to make of you, remember that. And remember that I care about justice. And if you forget justice, I will step in among you and I will execute justice for the fatherless, the widow, and the sojourner, just like I did on your behalf. So that's the reason for the "and now" that's sort of a non sequitur, if you will. So we have this long recap, "and now," and what does the Lord require of you? What he requires of you is to be a just society, and the bellwether for whether or not your society is just is how do you treat the powerless. And oh, by the way, that's why he says, I don't take a bribe. Because what happens in a society when you've got powerful people that want justice subverted on their behalf? They bribe somebody. Powerful, wealthy people have got the means to bribe. They can reach in their pocket and they can pay off a judge or pay off a senator or pay off somebody to get something to happen that would not normally happen in a just society. So God is saying, I don't take bribes. You can't do that with me. And oh, by the way, if you have a society that is run on the basis of bribes and corruption, at some point what's going to happen is I'm going to reach into that society and I'm going to execute justice for the fatherless, the sojourner, and the widow. That's the whole point here. So this passage in Deuteronomy 10, what does the Lord require of you, Israel? In other words, this is a national thing. This is what I want your nation to be like. And this is what I want you to remember. The other place where we have what does the Lord require of you is in Micah 6. And I will take you there. I'm not going to read the whole chapter 6. But to give you background, Micah is a contemporary of Isaiah. So during the time of Micah's life, the northern kingdom gets sanded off by the Assyrians. And the problem with the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom is they have fallen into apostasy and corruption. The northern kingdom goes first. About 100 and some odd years later, the southern kingdom goes. But if you read Isaiah and Micah both, they indict both the northern and southern kingdoms. So they're both corrupt. What Micah starts off with is quoting God in verse 3, "Oh my people, what have I done to you? How have I wearied you? Answer me." In other words, you guys have gone badly astray. In what way have I mistreated you that would cause you to do this? That's the question. And of course, it's a rhetorical question because he then lists all of the things that he has done for them. And he, in fact, hasn't done anything that should cause them to become corrupt and worship other gods. So that's the lead-in. And then down to verse 7, "Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" And one of the characteristics of Israel at that time is they were doing the temple stuff. They were doing the sacrifices, you know, they were showing up for the feast, they were doing all that stuff, but their society had become corrupt. And they were, in fact, oppressing the powerless. That's the reason why God finally sends them off into exile, is because of the way they treat the powerless, just as he grabbed them out of Egypt for the same reason. So that's the historical background. God is saying here, you guys have gone astray. And Israel is saying, well, what do we do? Do we bring more sacrifices? Do we bring 10,000 rivers of oil? What is it going to take for us to get back into your good graces? God, how can we bribe you? That's really what that says. Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oils? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? And that's exactly right. How can we bribe you to leave us alone? How can we bribe you so that our society continues in the corruption that it is in, and you just back off? And of course, God said back in Deuteronomy, I don't take bribes. The cattle on 1,000 hills belong to him, so there's nothing we can give him to bribe him. So here's the second part then. Micah 6:8. He has told you, O man, what is good. In other words, this isn't anything new. I'm reminding you, I'm not giving you anything new. So he has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? Remember, that's how we had it back in Deuteronomy 10:12. What does the Lord require of you? That's the key between these two. But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. That's a very different list than we had back in Deuteronomy. And the key there is the list back in Deuteronomy is for the nation. This list is for the individual. And if the individuals as a whole are righteous, then the nation will be fine. Notice the cascade here. Do justice. This is what I want you to actually do. Love kindness. Ah, that's different now. We're talking about the heart. We're not just talking about what do you do, but what's your attitude toward it. Just like back in Deuteronomy, it says, circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart. So we're still talking about the heart in both cases. And then finally, walk humbly with your God. And I don't know about you, but I have met lots of people who don't walk humbly with their God. They walk arrogantly with their God. In other words, I got the keys to the kingdom. You aren't doing it my way. Therefore, you're apostate. Or something like that. So the idea then of walking humbly with your God is to understand that each of us who try to follow God may have a slightly different understanding. There's three churches in this building. All of us are different. We got Calvinists, the Reformed Baptists, we got Baptists that own the building, and they look at us and, you know, why are you doing all that Jewish stuff? Well, because we're supposed to. Well, why are you a Calvinist? Well, because that's how I read the scripture. But the point is, we all are trying our best to walk with God. And the fact that we've got all three of us in this same building is a testimony to walking in humility. In other words, I don't go up to Doug Van Dorn, who's the pastor of the other church, and say, how's it going there, bacon breath? You understand what I'm saying? And by the way, I'm not saying that all paths lead to God. Don't get me wrong. But these people believe the scriptures. They read the same book we do. They're just parts of it that they see differently. God will sort that out. It's not my problem. My problem is to walk as I see it. So do justice. How do you behave? Love kindness. How's your heart? And then be humble as you walk before God. That's individual, as opposed to the Deuteronomy 10 passages, how do you want the nation to be organized? But notice the centrality in both of them is justice. That's in the middle both times. God says, I will execute justice for the downtrodden if you don't. Micah says, you do justice. You yourself do justice, and, oh, by the way, ensure that your people do justice. So that takes us to where we are today. And I don't know if you guys read the news, certainly none of you do, but what we have right now in this country is a two-tiered justice system. You've got one justice system for the powerful. In other words, what we have right now is we have our national government is embroiled in a bribery scandal. It's all over the news. They're trying to suppress it, how the son of a president has basically taken bribes on his behalf. So what we have in Washington is Washington operates on bribes. And it's not just him. I mean, that's what lobbyists do, is they bribe people in order to get legislation that they want. What God is saying is no, because when the powerful get things their own way and subvert justice with a bribe, what happens to the weak is they get enslaved, run over, and trampled. Now, I am very fond of saying that one of the things about Scripture is it presents us with case studies. That's why we don't need to rewrite any of this. That's why we don't have an Isaiah that's showing up. I don't need to send you an Isaiah. Read the book. You're doing the same stuff. I haven't changed. My mind has not changed, says God. The stuff I said in Isaiah and Micah and Jeremiah and all of the prophets is still the same. Go read them. And then look at yourself in a mirror. Now, what happens with societies is it's cyclic. We see that in Israel. You'll have periods of revival, and things will go along fine for a number of years, and then they'll start sliding downhill. What is my prayer right now is that we are done sliding downhill and we'll turn around and start going back up the slope. And that is a God thing. We have to pray for God to send us revival. We have to pray for God to awaken His people. Because you've got lots of people out there that are nominal Christians who are basically just go along, get along. And, well, before it gets too bad, I'll be raptured out of here. Or whatever their particular attitude is. The gospel and every bit of the Bible is intensely political. It's all designed to tell you, first off, how to live yourself. That's what the Micah passage is. And it also tells you how to have your society be one that is pleasing to God. So if you get run out of the public square where somebody says, well, no, you can't impose your religion on me. I don't want to impose my religion on you. I want to impose God's moral standards on you. Notice I said that, impose. Because every law that ever gets written imposes somebody's standard on society. Whether it's, we got to save the world, all right, fine. We're going to get rid of all the light bulbs. Have anybody ever thought how stupid it is to have a tax on plastic bags? You go into the grocery store and you buy milk in a plastic bottle. You buy meat with plastic covering over the top of it. You buy yogurt in a plastic tub, and then you're destroying the planet because you take it home in a plastic grocery bag? I mean, that's stuck on stupid. See, I mean, it's just a tax, don't get me wrong. But my point is, when they passed that tax, somebody was imposing his view of what morality was on the rest of us. That's how it was sold. But they say that you cannot impose the morality in Scripture on us because separation of church and state or something like that. But understand, every law is a statement of somebody's moral beliefs. And it's time we start changing laws so they have God's moral beliefs as their standard, which was how we started out. But again, the rich and powerful, God bless them, did bribes and so forth to get changes in the laws to accommodate what they wanted. And again, don't get me wrong, it is entirely human. And that's why things are cyclic. And what I am praying for is the cycle right now is at the bottom, and we're going to start going back up. Otherwise, we're going to be up to our hips in hairy Chinese or Russians or something. Because God says, if you don't do it, I will. Sort of like, don't make me come down there. So, it's ours to do. Do it, and don't be intimidated by people who say, you can't impose that on me. Well, yeah, you can. You're trying to impose it on me. I mean, turnabout's fair play.